This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
It's one thing to commit a horrific crime. It's another to erase your tracks with surgical precision. In this segment, we're diving into what didn't show up in the Brian Koberger investigation. His digital footprint. Because while the newly unsealed documents give us clearer details on what law enforcement found at the crime scene and in his apartment, they also confirm a gaping hole where his online activity should have been. Not saying it wasn't there at one point in time, more so it's been erased and apparently non-recoverable. Apparently. Search history wiped, social media connections erased, any digital trail that might point to motive, obsession, or planning gone. Retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaff are going to join me here in a second to unpack what that void really tells us. Because if you're studying criminology at a PhD level and you're allegedly executing a complex, high-risk quadruple homicide, your digital life should leave a breadcrumb trail of some sort, should it not? The fact that Koberger's didn't wasn't an accident. It seems to be intent. Or did they not dig deep enough? I'm not trying to be critical here, but I'm going to say this. Not just because we don't have the information, not because they didn't come up with a very much of anything in terms of his digital breadcrumb trail, but because there appears to be some gaping things, large pieces of evidence that have been dismissed, that have been revealed to have been dismissed as, well, that can't be him. You know where I'm going with this if you watch on a regular basis. Papa Roger, you know, the online persona of Brian Koberger, the guy who apparently knew information about killings before anybody else, the profile picture that looks suspiciously like Brian Koberger before anybody knew who Brian Koberger was, the one with the username Papa Roger, that's a clear nod to Elliot Roger, the incel who carried out an attack on young women in a different style of way, but seemingly with a similar style of motive. You're telling me that's not Brian Koberger? Then explain to me how that individual knew what Koberger looked like, was able to create a graphic, was able to put up an image representing themselves, their profile picture that looks like Brian Koberger before anyone knew Brian Koberger was a suspect publicly. How that person knew about the knife sheath before anyone else did publicly. How that person said the Elantra was a red herring. If that's not Brian Koberger, which you now say wasn't, according to law enforcement, who was it? Because there's two options here. Law enforcement, who may have known at that point in time, although that can be argued, because the Papa Roger account popped up before we're aware that law enforcement even knew Brian Koberger's name or had a picture of him with information online. So there's someone on the inside got this, created this account with that image and was messing with the public? Was it a red herring to Koberger from law enforcement? Let's throw this out there. Kind of put a nod that we know who you are. And we're going to talk about things that we know only you know and we know, that might make you a little nervous. Was that the intent? Clearly, it has not come out that way in these affidavits. If that was the intent, you would think that might be revealed at this point. Or did they just not dig far enough? I know the reason was, well, the IP address didn't match. Well, there's VPNs, there's ways to shield an IP, redirect an IP, fake an IP. That's not rocket science. But if you're saying that wasn't Koberger, I don't know how much faith I have in you on all the other areas of digital evidence that you say don't exist. I just don't. Because if that equals that, if that equals nothing, and over here it's all wiped, I don't know. It leaves room for questions. It's certainly not about the guilt of Brian Koberger, but just the integrity of the investigation, of the depths to which this digital footprint was sought out. I don't know the answer to that. I do not. We're going to dig into what was actually recovered: DNA on a knife sheath, surveillance of his Elantra, newly described wounds on victims that hadn't been publicly detailed before now. We're not going to get gory, but these things do matter when it comes to trying to understand the rage, the motive, the madness of what took place here. And we talk about what's still missing. No murder weapon, no clean motive, no explanation from Koberger himself. So the question is, was this a genius in over his head or a control-obsessed narcissist trying to rewrite the evidence in real time? Let's get into it with Jennifer Coffendaffer.
Well, the first thing I wanted to see was confirmation on the order in which the students were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems very clear, as we all thought from what we knew previously, that Maddie was killed first, followed mm-hmm. by Kaylee, and then Zanna, and then Ethan. And then also to understand the details of those killings. Was one more vicious than the other?
Mm-hmm.
Was just trying to determine, of course, targeting
yeah.
and things like that, his reason. So that was one item. The other item, which unfortunately to me has ended up being a big goose egg, is the digital footprint. And apparently he erased a great deal of everything. So we're just not going to get to know, unfortunately. And that's a big problem, not getting his search history, not seeing different items he might have done on his computer and what he was researching. So unfortunately, his digital footprint is not a good one.
Is that because he went through and he deleted things? I mean, can we tell if things were deleted? Do we know if things were deleted? Or was he just not that, I guess, digital of a digger when it came to stalking his prey?
No, I think it was there. Apparently, he went to great lengths to make sure it would be erased and not found through other apps and things. We're still trying to get to the bottom of it. But from the interview with a ISP detective, we know now he wiped everything. So really, we don't know what we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, were there those contacts? I tell you, right after it broke that he was arrested, Tony,
mm-hmm.
I personally went and looked on Instagram and others, and I saw a connect, and the Consolvitz family did too. Law enforcement is saying there was not one. And when I say I saw a connect, I don't mean that they followed one another.
Mm-hmm.
I just mean that he attempted, I believe, to follow Kaylee and Maddie, if I recall correctly. I'd have to look back at that particular post. But Tony, it's all erased.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're going to be able to even look at his search history or anything. It sounds like it's gone.
And that's, I mean, that's one of those things in this case that kind of bothers me is, okay, it's gone. But is that where the trail ends? Just like Papa Roger, where I know they said, it's not him, that wasn't him. I question that, and I question, did they dig deep enough to really get the answers they're looking for digitally here? I mean, maybe the answer simply is it's gone, but I mean, is there any place these sort of things can be found? Because again, Papa Roger doesn't give me a lot of faith in this, that it went and dug deep enough into the identity of him or some of this other information digitally.
I know it's disconcerting because we thought we were going to see so many answers,
mm-hmm.
and instead we seem to have the exact same questions.
Yeah.
Some of the questions have been answered. Now we know the brutality. For the first time, I saw that Maddie Mogan had defensive wounds. They mm-hmm. described wounds on her forearm. They described wounds on her hands. Those are usually indicative of defensive wounds, which we've never known. I never knew she had a big mark as if she was struck or somewhere way brutalized from the nose clear over to the end of her eye. We never knew about that. You know, the gag marks, 20 plus stab wounds for Kaylee. Ethan, his jugular cut, his subclavian artery and vein cut. I don't even know if you want me to say, but basically his head lodged between the bed and the wall, Tony. Yeah. I mean, it's just, when I read these horrific, horrific details, we knew it was bad.
Yeah.
It's honestly worse than I thought.
It is. And it makes it all the more, I would say intriguing, but all the more questionable. How the hell did Brian Koberger not sustain any injuries in committing this crime and get out of there as cleanly as he apparently did? Or did he? Or are we learning more about maybe it wasn't quite as clean as we thought it was?
Well, if you look at that picture when he's in the white button-up shirt, the happy picture, he, right out, you know, in the morning, right after these crimes were committed, you can see definitely some bruising, it looks like to me, on his hand.
Yeah.
Pointed that out early.
Mm-hmm.
There was a huge, huge struggle that took place, but I do believe he was very well. His hands were appropriately, you know, had covering on them, his body. So that always would help. And I always say this, I mean, if you go in with a maniacal rage of a possible serial killer, certainly a mass murderer with a K-bar, with people who are sleeping, you're going to have the upper hand even when they wake up.
Sure.
So he had the, what we use in law enforcement, speed, surprise, violence of action. He had all of it.
Mm-hmm.
They had no chance. And so, Tony, but the questions that I think were frustrated that weren't answered are because his digital footprint has largely been erased.
Mm-hmm. And that's a question. I mean, so much is found in a digital footprint today. And with that being gone, it just leaves many, many questions. Are you surprised that there, at what was found in his apartment, meaning not a lot? I guess I was expecting maybe more digital, or not even necessarily digital, but certainly digital, but more pieces of evidence there, or maybe there is, but just wasn't necessarily conclusive to the investigation itself.
Well, you know, after they conducted those four search warrants of his car, his office, the house in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and his apartment in Pullman, when we went over those in a lot of detail, Tony, mm-hmm. and there wasn't a lot there. And I think that, of course, was by purpose.
Mm-hmm.
He was a smart guy. You know, people don't like, I guess people don't like to refer to him as smart, but he mm-hmm. was. And I will forever maintain, I don't know if he would have been convicted without the DNA. Would he have been arrested? Would they have known it was him? They may have arrested him just to get him off the streets and try to charge him with something.
Mm-hmm.
But without that DNA, Tony, I just don't know if there would have been a case. Now for instance, that the DoorDash driver, Tony.
Yeah.
The DoorDash driver didn't really see him.
Yeah, that's another interesting part of this whole thing. We recently, in the last couple of months before all this happened, before he pled, the DoorDash driver, that video came out of her talking with the law enforcement officer after she was pulled over. They thought it was a DUI. It wasn't. She was taking a prescription medication that she was entitled to take. But she had mentioned in that interview that she had seen Koberger. And everyone was like, whoa, that would not have been a good witness on the stand had this come to fruition, correct?
Yeah, it doesn't look good. I mean, she had a bad view. It was really foggy. The description is not good. When I say foggy, not in terms of foggy outside, mm-hmm. her foggy explanation of exactly what she saw, which makes a lot of sense, Tony. First of all, she's a DoorDash driver on the mission of dropping a package.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you might notice people in passing, especially at that hour, but nobody knew the critical nature of Brian Koberger being there,
yeah,
the white Elantra. And so for her to have sort of a cloudy take on what she actually saw makes actually a lot of sense, meaning I think she was being truthful when she was interviewed. Mm-hmm. What it seems she was exaggerating, though, was when she was in that arrest scenario, sort of exaggerating mm-hmm. her role in the situation.
And that's a scary thing, because if we had her on the stand and it's exaggerated, or if she believes what she's exaggerated, because people do that, time goes on, stories start changing a little bit. It's kind of human nature of how we are. I'm not saying she's trying to be untruthful or anything, but that could have backfired spectacularly and created reasonable doubt. So it's a good thing that it is, I guess, ended the way it did, because that would not have been a good look for trying to prosecute Brian Koberger. What other pieces of evidence that you've seen come out, other pieces from the police reports that have stood out to you so far?
Well, you know, a big question a lot of people had was that really blood going down the side of the house? A lot of people said, no, that's HVAC rust or mm-hmm. other things. Most of us believed it was blood. It was blood.
Oh,
and it was... you know, that information came forth, and then whose blood it was. It was Ethan's.
Mm-hmm.
So just horrible, these horrible details that I think people just wondered about for the mm-hmm. last 2.5 years. You know, give us the whole story, the whole outline of the investigation. And so I think many of us are just trying to take a look at this puzzle, and we just want the whole puzzle put together.
So what do you do when the trail you expect to follow doesn't exist? That's what law enforcement faced in the Koberger case. While the DNA match, surveillance footage, and phone data build a strong circumstantial wall, what they didn't have was equally telling. No search terms, no contact with victims, no Reddit threads that point to a growing obsession, just digital silence. And that silence wasn't a fluke. It was curated. As Jennifer made clear, this wasn't someone flying blind. Koberger understood what digital evidence can do to a suspect. He studied it, and he made damn sure to scrub everything he could before police knocked on his door. Whether or not he succeeded completely is still unclear, but what we know is much of what investigators hope to find just isn't there. But that absence shouldn't be confused with innocence. It's part of the control, and it may be the clearest behavioral indicator that we have of a man who wanted to design his own narrative, down to the last detailed search. Still, one thing holds: the DNA, the knife sheath, the cell tower pings, the white Elantra. That's the structure of the case, and without it, Jennifer's right. This trial might have looked very different. The silence is telling, but the evidence... it still speaks. Tell me what your thoughts are in the comment section on our YouTube page. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi if you're not already there. If you're listening to us on the podcast platform, thank you. Press subscribe and do check us out there. If you're on YouTube right now watching us, hi, how are you? Thank you for being here. Check out our podcast platform as well so you can listen to us on the go, wherever you want. Again, just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to find us there as well. And again, like I said, let me know your thoughts in the comments section. Until next time, I am Tony Bruschi. Thanks for watching. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now. And don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.